Have you got game? The Lowdown.
Hello and welcome to a year-end edition of the Got Game podcast. Yay. My name is Momin Qureshi, Christine Chubb and Steve Longer here. Sadly, Patrick Luciani and Colin Robertson not here, but that's okay. They will be back in 2018, I assume.
I will have to represent Patrick's PC Master Race.
Yes, you will.
PC Master Race.
So we hope you all had a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and whatever else you do over the holiday break. Hope you got to spend time with people you like and people you love, and maybe you got some cool gaming stuff. Hopefully, the Holiday Buyers episode that we did a couple weeks ago helped you out, and you are currently listening to this podcast while playing a new console or a new game that you got.
You're probably playing a Switch, right? You're playing Mario right now.
Maybe you're listening on new headphones that you got, because that's what we recommended.
Not true. Those HyperX Clouds, you know.
Those HyperX Cloud headphones really help with a mono-leveled podcast. That's what we know. So this episode, since we're in the last week of 2017, how did we end up in the last week of 2017? I feel like I blinked and this year went past.
Well, because it's been, we've been so busy gaming. It's been so good.
Oh, disputable.
For you!
All right, calm down, settle down. We're gonna get to it. So we should let you know that because this is the last week of the year, we're going to do our year in review show. So we're going to look back at the highs and lows of 2017, the best games, the worst games, what let us down, what we loved, what surprised us. All that is going to be done next week, our first show of 2018, which will air on January 2nd. We're going to look forward into what to expect next year, what we're looking forward to most, and all that kind of good stuff. So make sure you turn in that to the next week. But for now, we're going to look back at the 2017 that was. I think we all feel pretty comfortable that nothing is going to come up in the next 5 days that's going to really blow people away gaming-wise. So we feel pretty comfortable in looking back and rating.
I don't know. The Ball and Cup Simulator could be...
could be amazing.
You've
right?
changed it all completely, I mean, Mom. Could be,
yeah, it's true. It's quite possible. All right, so let's take a look back at 2017. I mean, there was a lot of highs, a lot of lows,
a lot of controversy.
I don't know where you want to start.
So there's a how are we going to format this? Are we going by company? Are we going like month by month? Like what's
game
going
of the year,
here?
Letdown of the year. Okay, let's just do what you think the story of the year was, and it can be something that was good or bad. Or whatever.
How about the positive story and the negative story?
Okay. I feel like we're going to all end in a similar area. But,
yeah, probably.
But I'll let you lead, Steve. You tell me what your story of the year is.
Well, the story of the year is definitely Nintendo.
100%.
It's absolutely Nintendo. This show has not held back on any criticism of Nintendo during the what was that mysterious thing called before the Switch? the Wii,
the Dark Years.
I can't even remember
it. It was called the Nintendo Dark Years.
Right.
It was like, called the Pit of Despair.
It was called the Christine Soapbox. Nintendo, get your head out of your ass.
But it's fair to say, Steve, because
the Wii U was an unmitigated disaster.
Yes, and not only was it a disaster, during that sort of 2 to 3 year stretch, they had a lot of bad stuff happen to them.
Oh, yeah.
They were making missteps all over the place, and it just wasn't going well. So Nintendo, with the start of 2017, you could argue that they desperately needed a good year. They really needed a good year.
And not only did they have a good year, they had...
They had a monster year.
Ignore the first 2 months, January, February, March hit, and then that's when all momentum changed because then suddenly you started hearing about like, the Switch is actually looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Right? At least this could actually kind of work. Then it launched, and it not only launched, it launched with the Game Awards Game of the Year, Breath of the Wild.
What game is that, Christine?
There it
like
is.
I gotta say it one more time before the end of the year.
But that's the thing. Nintendo comes into this year with a lot riding on it because they've had a few kind of subpar years. They need to have a good showing. And it's riding on a console that a lot of people are like, okay, the Wii U was kind of bunk. And the Switch is like, I don't know, we don't really know what it is. It's kind of like several things in one. And so people are really skeptical. So we don't really know what to expect. And can they make a comeback? And then they smashed it.
It felt almost identical to like to the original Wii launch.
Yeah.
Right? Where there was some skepticism, right? But like... because it was launching with like what is actually a GameCube game, because Breath of the Wild is actually just a Wii U game, right? But like the Wii launched with Twilight Princess, right? So it was just like a Twilight Princess machine to most people, just how the Switch to most people was just a Breath of the Wild machine. But then similar to like to the Wii with Wii Sports and how that took off with like kind of more casual base. Mm-hmm. Like the Switch also came with it, like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. One-two Switch was a really fantastic tech demo. Mm-hmm. Snipper Clips was like a super fun kind of launch thing, just to kind of show you the capabilities of this thing. And from then on, they had all momentum in the world. It's just like nonstop positive press.
And that's really key here is that they timed it out really well in the sense that their console came out, but they also had a couple of their heavy hitters come out really early. Yes. So the fact that Breath of the Wild came out right as it was launching, so it got that like huge group of people who were really like rabid Zelda fans.
People like me.
I'm going to buy this. People yeah. like you, you know, like who were really into it, like, I'm going to buy this and I'm going to play this. And then Breath of the Wild was stellar. The system was going well. And it, you're right, it just built up this crazy momentum where like Splatoon 2, Mario Kart 8, you know, and then of course Odyssey later in the year. So it just kind of got people really hyped.
Yeah,
it
ascended right up for Odyssey. Like Odyssey kind of came out in October. And now it's, well, we're still talking about it, right? So basically the Switch story, Nintendo's storyline, just it never left their consciousness as soon as the Switch launched. So Nintendo came back with a vengeance.
The biggest thing I think that they did right is the thing that all consoles seem to have the biggest problem with, is having games not only at launch, but a consistent amount of titles throughout the year. And I remember
they spread them out, right?
Yeah, when the Switch came out and everybody was like, okay, we've got Zelda, and then all you could see was how far away Odyssey was. And the worry, I remember being super worried that there was going to be nothing in between. Nintendo has had more games come out, more exclusive games come out, in like the first 6 months of launch than Xbox has had in the last 2 years.
Yep.
Like they have just...
In the entire Wii U life cycle, it feels like.
It is amazing how many games they were just like, no, we're just churning them. Here comes another one. Here comes another one.
And
you want a port? Here's a port. Oh, yeah. You want this? We've got more coming. Oh, look, we're going to announce 3 more titles that, sure, they're games from 6 years ago, but they're some of the best games that came out that year, and we're going to let you play them again on a portable console.
It's what Nintendo's great at, man, is first-party exclusives. They're
think of any other console that did that many games
it's not just first party. As Christine mentioned, like Nintendo's biggest problem was always third party support. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right,
they've tried so hard to get it
will always be third party support, but it seems like they got it right.
They got it in terms of older games.
Yes,
we'll see if third parties start making like if they start putting out like games on the Xbox, the PlayStation 4, and the Switch at the same time.
It's not just the older games. It's kind of like not the bigger studios. It's the indie studios as well have latched onto it, right? Mm-hmm. It's because like they'll generally, indie games are generally speaking going to be like kind of platformer, side scroll, 2D things, which are just like, this is perfect for a handheld console, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we're talking about a monster year for Nintendo. We haven't even talked SNES Classic, which, like, that was like, you know, NES Classic was huge last year, but SNES Classic was, if not even bigger this year. They rolled out, they learned from last year. They had a bigger amount available on launch day. It's still hard to find one, but it's not as hard to find an NES Classic. And I think people were, like, a little bit more pumped, you know, a little bit more prepared, a little bit more pumped for the SNES Classic. So that was another huge success. Hopefully, N64 Classic coming, I don't know, maybe.
And is anybody eating their Super Mario cereal? Like, who expected them to bring out a cereal, too?
Samus returned this year.
Yep.
Metroid, on the 3DS. So,
and they announced more is coming.
And that's another thing. At E3, they announced that like they're making Metroid Prime 4. Nintendo captured the momentum and just ran with it. Like, there's nothing... Like, if you don't think Nintendo was the biggest video game story of the year, like you're off your rocker. You're insane.
And I mentioned this on our show a couple weeks ago, and I'll say it in more like detail now. And that Nintendo could have played it safe. They could have put out a console that was playing it safe. They could have put out a Zelda that was playing it safe. They could have put out a Mario that was playing it safe, and they kind of just built on the same tropes that they usually did. And it would have been fine. Probably would have been successful. People probably would have ate it up. People probably would have liked it. People probably would have bought it. But they didn't. They kind of went for it.
They swung for the fences.
They really did. With the console, with the Switch, they went for something completely different, a 3-in-1 console, which, you know, they've been known for gimmicks before, and they were like, nope, we're going to go for it. With the Breath of the Wild, they went for their most ambitious Zelda game ever made, biggest, most open, most graphically like beautiful, intense, most gameplay. With Mario, they could have went with the standard Mario game, but they didn't. They went with this whole hat mechanic and really revolutionized the actual game. So they changed up a lot, and they went for it, and people bought into it, and it worked for them in spades. And like, you got to give them credit for, like, you know, going for it, and they went for it, and it worked.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was the end.
Absolutely.
Of the
that is an accurate description, everything that you've said.
All right. So aside from Nintendo, Christine, I'm going to go to you just out of...
For disappointments.
Yeah, just out of intuition and say, what is the biggest disappointment of the year? Oh, she adjusted her seat. And, oh, man. She's getting ready for this.
I've been ready. I've been waiting for this.
Knuckles are being cracked.
Dear Xbox. I have been with you for several years now, and I have loved you and stood by you. But this year, you made it so hard to have faith in you, to have any faith in you. While other gamers had fantastic years, I had nothing, nothing to do, and nothing to play. I just sat there and I was like, oh, gee, another game. That's going to be somebody's game of the year. Great. I'm so excited. I don't get to play it. Like, I've never had a year where I thought to myself, I am going to buy any other console. I'm going to drop all the money just because I wanted to play something, anything. And you gave me nothing. Like, I've never liked handheld consoles. I've never had any interest in playing them. I haven't owned a Nintendo product in a decade. But I thought, maybe I'm going to get that Switch. I looked
it
at it.
You made Steve so happy.
Several times this year, I looked at it and thought, I really want to play Zelda. I really want to play Mario. Mm-hmm. I have nothing to play.
Join us.
Nothing. And then looking at PlayStation, I was like, oh, look at all the games. Look at, I want to play Horizon Zero Dawn. That looks really good. Oh, look what's coming up. A whole bunch of other games that I want to play.
Last
oh, Xbox, device. What do you have? You have nothing. You're offering me nothing. I'm looking forward and I don't see anything. Nothing that I want is in their future. What the hell? Like,
do you feel better?
I'm so upset. And for a year where you released another console, you gave me no reason to buy it. You gave me nothing to play on it.
But
Forza is fine. It is
always
Forza.
Think of the 6 billion teraflops.
You can shove those teraflops up their Terra ass. I don't care. There's nothing to do with the teraflops. I got nothing. You gave me nothing.
So there you go. Xbox. Story of the year for Christine Chubb, but for all the wrong reasons.
It's so disappointing.
And you know what the problem is? Like, all the games that you can play or that you did play that you might have enjoyed were available on the PlayStation 4
and on PC.
And so that's the problem.
And then some of them are actually on the Switch. Like, actually.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's good to have a variety in games that you can play on all consoles, but exclusives are what drive machines, and Xbox just doesn't have them right now.
Cuphead's fantastic. Play Cuphead,
It wasn't even the fact that they didn't have the exclusives. It's that everybody else had such better games.
Yeah.
It wasn't, like, I've never been a big exclusives fan. Like, I like Forza. It's a fine game, and I love to play that. And once a million years ago when you had the Fable franchise, I really liked it. I couldn't care less about Halo. But it was looking at the games that are being made for the other consoles and then looking at Nintendo.
And ones are down the pipe, right?
Like, yeah. And looking at Microsoft and seeing nothing in the future that interests me at all.
Well, I mean, like, this speaks to, like, a real problem with the Xbox. I know that you're not huge on Halo, right?
I could care
but like
Halo.
Well, like, Halo is such an important franchise. It is the identity of the Xbox. And I mean, like, Halo 5, we had it like what, 2 years ago? Mm. And they did like Halo Wars 2, but like we haven't seen their flagship in so long.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, or Gears. Right. Yeah, their other one.
Right? I mean, we actually had Gears last year, but right. like it was so forgettable
yeah.
that well.
As in, I actually forgot it
happened.
It wasn't
great. It, like, I remember playing it and being like, this kind of sucks.
But this is what I mean. Like, every console kind of has its flagship. Obviously, Nintendo, we know what their flagships are, and they delivered with them this year. For Sony, it's kind of like that cinematic experience, right? Like the Uncharted, mm-hmm. which Sony we got a new Uncharted game this
you
year
did,
actually,
and it looked right? good.
Yeah. Right, Lost Legacy is great, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. and Horizon is like kind of in that mold of what Sony's signature is,
mm-hmm. and that's with Last of Us 2 coming next yeah. year, probably,
and Death Stranding and that shooting zombie one that's coming, and there's like two or three other ones that are coming for exclusives for PlayStation next year. And that's the thing, is that the PlayStation exclusives look like games that I want to play. Mm-hmm. They look like story-driven narratives,
yes,
first-person
absolutely.
Games, that's... where there's single-player experience, and that's what I love. And Xbox is walking away from that. They're throwing it out the window, and that's not me. I have no interest in that whatsoever, which tells me that in 2018... Christine is buying a PS4.
Really?
Nice.
I can't spend
Welcome.
Another year not playing any goddamn games.
Talk about exclusive stories right there.
I can't Welcome. Play. I can't yeah. spend 2018 playing nothing, waiting to play nothing. Even at the Game Awards a few weeks ago, where were any Xbox exclusives? Where was anything?
I mean, like, technically the announcement for Xbox, the big announcement for Xbox was like the release date of PUBG for the Xbox
I
One.
I don't care about
PUBG. But like this, the point I'm trying to make is like the Xbox's identity, what they're shifting to is like they're trying to be like a multiplayer shooter. They're trying to be like a multiplayer shooter kind of system. Like that to me what Xbox's identity always was with Halo, and it just feels like they just don't deliver on it. Like, it's so weird.
It was the worst year. It was such a pathetic year for Xbox that they should be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah.
And I think there's a reason why there was at one point in time, I wasn't sure if the Xbox One X had come out or not, because I forgot. I was like, is it a thing? Did it come out? Like, it was a super weak launch. It had really nothing going for it. And if you're going to tell people to buy your product right before Christmas, you have to give them a reason to do it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they did. If you're going to launch this thing, launch it with a humdinger of a game.
And here's the thing. I'm going to transition into one of the
Halo 6, right?
I'm going to transition into one of the best parts of this year, which was Cuphead, which was an amazing, like, excellent
great story,
game,
first
great
of all.
Great story that people were waiting a long time for and paid off, and turns out to be probably Xbox's biggest game and best game of the year.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about
and
it.
And this is no slight against Cuphead. That's a very sad statement.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a very sad statement that an indie game that was years in development, that people were waiting for a long time, turned out to be your highlight of the year, which is great for the folks at MDHR and the Cuphead, and it's a Canadian game, so it's awesome.
Yeah.
But it's also simultaneously a sad statement for Xbox that's the game that people have picked out of your bunch to say that this is like the best thing you did this year.
It's like Christine said. If you want like narrative focused, like kind of role playing kind of stuff, right? Action adventure things, you're just straight up boned with the Xbox, because yep. like it's like yeah you can get like there's obviously multi platform things like Assassin's Creed, like
right.
I know Christine didn't like it, I didn't mind it, right? But like. That's still something that you can just get on the PlayStation 4 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Exclusives do matter, right? In the grand scheme of things, which is why, like, when someone asks me what console they should get, and they can only get one, I will always recommend the PlayStation 4. Pretty much, like, I'll always recommend it.
The question I always ask people when it's what console should I get is, what exclusives do you like? What do you like playing? What exclusives are available on the system? And the other one is, what do your buddies have, because you should try to get something if you intend an online game. But if you can just, if you're just into like random online gaming, then it doesn't matter. But exclusives are really what should sell you on a system, you know. And then that's, and right now, I mean, I guess it goes in waves. But right now, Xbox is in that really low point of their wave.
They're way down. This feels like where Nintendo was with the Wii U.
100% a couple years ago.
It feels really bad.
Sure. Even at E3 last year, it was just like, how was this not a fantastic time to announce three brand new exclusive huge titles? Like, giant ones from big studios that you can rely on that would be not just your run-and-gun shooting kind of game. That would be something that would really be a huge looking forward to. I mean, and but not just rely on all of your old standards. Like, you have to be
able
to...
Sea of Thieves did get a release date at the Game Awards.
It did, which I am excited about.
It looks really cool.
It does,
that looks like a fun game, and people have been waiting a while for that.
But not the kind of big quality exclusive.
One of the most telling things is we have some listeners to our show who are hardcore Xbox fans who slammed the PS4, who ended up buying PS4s this year.
Yeah.
And they switched over because they were like, look, there's nothing out there right now.
And I'm doing it like in any minute.
Yeah.
It's happening.
I just want to switch back to Cuphead. That was one of the biggest surprises of the year and one of the most like welcome surprises of the year, because Cuphead was like, you know, we had talked about it at E3 a couple years ago when they had it at the Xbox news conference, and then we didn't have a release date on it, and then it was getting delayed, and they didn't know what they were doing with it.
It kept changing, like, what the game was going to be, right? Because before, it was really just a boss rush mode.
Yeah.
And then they decided, you know what? We're going to turn it into just like a real platformer.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, like, its evolution, very, very interesting.
And when it finally came out, it turned out to be fantastic.
Great game.
And not fantastic just in a gameplay mode, which it was. Like, the boss battles are super intense and super challenging, like, smash your controller against the wall, frustrating. What is it called? Bloodborne? Is that what it was? Or what was the game that was?
Dark Souls.
Dark Souls, thank you. Dark Souls challenging. But also, like, the animation is this weird, like, 1930s, 1940s, old style animation, but it looks great. It's very colorful. It's very beautiful. The music, the original music, is awesome in it. The storyline is like, you know, it's got this weird juxtaposition of like this colorful old style animation, but a really dark storyline about the devil and stealing your souls and these two like cup children, cup-headed mugmen trying to get their souls back. So the whole package was just so well done. And on top of that, it's out of a studio called MDHR out of here in Southern Ontario. So, you know, we had Maya Moldenhauer on a few weeks ago to talk about the game. And so like, it's just a huge congratulations to those guys. They won a couple of awards at the Game Awards. And it's just like a wicked game. And I cannot recommend that game highly enough. It's just a super fun game, and it's not as expensive as the rest of the games out there. It's not an $80 game.
No.
So it's worth it to go out and invest in it and play it, because you can get a lot of fun out of it.
If you have an Xbox One, you need to have it. If you have a PC, you should probably have it.
Yeah.
And I mean, when I think about the games that I'm looking forward to next year for Xbox, one of the games that I was looking forward to as an exclusive was We Happy Few.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's coming everywhere. So it's like, well, you can't even hold on to the games that could have been really good exclusives?
Well, yeah, like, also...
timed exclusives.
Well, another one that happened in this year was when... who was making the new Spider-Man game?
Insomniac, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
A former Xbox partner is now doing stuff for PlayStation. And
no. Insomniac was always Sony.
Weren't they with Xbox?
They're like a second-party Sony studio, I'm pretty sure.
Maybe you're right. But, I mean, by the way, when is that Spider-Man game coming out? We have a release date for that?
I don't think we have a release date yet.
I don't think they said yet.
I know you're all about that Spider-Man Arkham City.
Yeah. when we saw that trailer for the first time, I joked, and I was like, we should call this Spider-Man Arkham City. But more on that next week's show. We're talking about what we're looking forward to. Anything else in terms of, like, where are we going in terms of...
Well, disappointments, I mean, like, I think we got to say Battlefront.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And
you want to talk about one of the stories of the year.
That's a story of the year.
It was late in the year, but oh, yeah. That was a huge story.
Because it brought to the forefront like gaming's dirty little secret that, like, EA's. It feels like I wasn't on the show when you guys originally discussed it, but like, EA just completely screwed up the party for everyone because they pushed it too hard.
Yeah.
Because I personally don't think there's inherently anything wrong with loot box gotcha, right? Like gotcha systems, right? But because a lot of free-to-play mobile games, they rely on this to support their studio, right?
free to play being the key there.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. But EA pushed it to the extreme, where now that like you have like European governments threatening to shut down games, and like this could be disastrous for the video game industry because like, yes, video games are super expensive, right? But they rely on kind of DLC and kind of extra people paying extra things to keep supporting the games, because we think paying $80 for a game is super expensive. Games are probably they're probably actually worth for retail way more than that to actually pay for. Probably like $150 to pay for a game. So we might have to actually eat all that cost just to play a game now.
Right. But I think the thing with the EA thing too was that they were almost like smug about it, and that's why. Remember when they did the Reddit AMA about it, and they were kind of just like not really being apologetic, or they were being kind of smug about it, and that really rubbed people the wrong way. And like you said, it just seemed like it was more of a cash grab than a we're trying to like make our costs back because games are expensive. Because I think gamers are at least a little understanding of that games cost this much.
I don't think gamers are understanding of that at all. Actually,
well, I think they're a little understanding. Maybe they don't want to pay it, but still, but that. And I think what was also frustrating was that this wasn't just a game. This is a Star Wars game.
Yeah, you don't lock out Darth Vader.
Yeah, you don't lock out Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker and all these characters that people want to play in a Star Wars game. Like, you can't put them behind paywalls or thousands of hours of grinding to get them.
But I mean, like, so this is controversial because I'll defend EA on that, right? Because Battlefront is a multiplayer shooter, right? Like, yes, it has a single player campaign, but like, no one's really going to play it because people care about the multiplayer, right? Because like that, because like,
I wanted it for the single player.
It's from DICE. DICE does Battlefield, so Battlefront, right? Like, that's what they do. So you will eventually unlock it. It's a multiplayer game because you're just going to sink hundreds and hundreds of hours in this game because all you do is you just run the same maps again and again and again and again and again and again and again because that's what you do when you play multiplayer games.
So
you will eventually get everything right.
4,000 hours, Steve. 4,000 hours. That's a preposterous amount. I know you are somebody who, like, in my life, I think you're the person who games the most. Like, you sink the most hours into gaming. Tell me there's a game out there that you've sunk 4,000 hours into.
Probably, which Street Fighter would it be? It would be probably, actually, no, it was probably Marvel vs. Capcom 2.
But over the course of how long, though?
Of years.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like, you gamers shouldn't be required to do that. I think EA really learned a lot. They got burned pretty bad. We're going to have to see what the future holds because they say that those microtransactions will be back at some point.
Yeah.
So we don't know how it's going to be back. This is just a temporary pause.
They'll probably come back with like, cosmetic crap.
You know what we really learned this year? And not to put them at all on the same level, so I'm not going to mention the same breath, but what we learned this year is that people on the internet, if you make enough noise and you push hard enough, you can make changes. Because with this, it's like that's what happened with this EA thing. People screamed loud, and then EA was like, we got to do something about this.
I think if it hadn't have been a Disney product, I don't think they would have just given them the finger and told them to suck it up.
I absolutely agree with that.
But that's because the people did it, though. Because what happened was on
because
Reddit.
Because Disney was like, nope.
But that's, again.
Iger came down on
right,
them.
But that's because of the people. Because what happened was on Reddit, people were like, look, EA is not going to do anything about this unless we start like including Disney's actual handle in our complaints. So people went on Twitter and were basically like at Disney. On Instagram, they were like at Disney. And then that's when Disney was getting all these flood of like complaints. And they're like, what the hell is going on? Because if people were just doing it at EA, Disney wasn't going to care. But then they started including Disney's handle and all this kind of stuff. And then Disney was like, well, this is some BS. Like, we have to do something about this. So again, it was because the people started like rattling the cages Disney.
I think this is one example. I think like generally saying gamers, if you're loud enough,
That's fair.
You've got a big conglomerate like Disney behind you who would, the last thing they would want to do is tarnish a franchise that they've purchased and have a movie coming out for, then, you know, I don't think any other company would have been like, well, Or even EA with any other franchise would have been like, too bad, sucks to be you, just keep playing our games and giving us money.
If they did this with Battlefield 1, for example, that came out last year, and I was complaining, EA would probably literally just like put up like a gif of them like sticking the finger to people.
Yeah, there's no question the Disney effect had a major thing, but I think it's... Yeah. The people got mad, got Disney involved into it.
Well, even a few weeks ago at the Game Awards when Zachary What's-His-Face was like, nobody likes microtransactions, they're garbage. It's like, yeah, everybody knows that. Yeah. Like, this is not a secret that gamers hate microtransactions.
But the thing is, microtransactions are still a reality to help support the business. Because games are too bloody expensive to make.
And that's the key to, I think, what we're going to see over the next year to 2 years. Is where do they fit? Because I think EA learned that you can't just blanketly put them in and people are going to roll over and accept it. But gamers have to learn that they're a fact of life and they're going to be there. And so what's the happy medium where you're willing to have them in there and pay it so that everybody can be happy?
But this is very mean. I feel like EA screwed the party for everyone.
Yeah.
Like they just absolutely crushed it because this example of like gamers getting a little bit extra power, you know, they might just go tell other companies, you know, to stick it. Yeah. Essentially,
I think.
Right?
I think we talked about this when we were a few weeks ago. We were talking about this topic in general. I still think that the happy medium they'll find is they'll set a precedent saying that games rated M for mature can have this in it, like, and loot box thing in it. Because that's the whole thing is like kids. It's like gambling for kids, you know.
It's absolutely not gambling.
It's really not. It's like having that stupid carnival thing, the
exactly,
big circle.
That's the exact.
Because everybody wins a prize.
Yeah,
how
so
is
that's
it gambling
exactly
if
how,
everybody
how,
wins
how I
a
would
prize?
Phrase it as well. It's not gambling.
You don't get what you want, but you still get a prize.
But you still got something.
Welcome to life.
Yeah.
I don't know.
One of the biggest toys this holiday season was basically an actual loot box. It was a circle thing, and it was like, guess what you'll get inside? Like, yeah, it's like those mystery crates that people buy off eBay. Like,
yeah.
You still get something for your money. It may not be what you want, but you're still doing something. Also, you know, like, they're not going away. Like you said. But as long as they don't make it mandatory, like, I never pay for stuff like that. I don't pay
A good example of loot box system implemented is like an Overwatch, because what you're basically doing is you're rolling for the chance of getting like a legendary skin, right?
Yeah.
And that's it, right? This skin is actually completely worthless because it's not like on a Steam ecosystem where like an Counter-Strike knife skins can be worth a ton on the Steam store. Mm-hmm. But in Blizzard and Overwatch, like you're not going to be able to make any money off of like having like the really really cool Symmetra Halloween legendary skin.
Some funky Hanzo thing, yeah.
Yeah.
So no question, Battlefront 2. I had that wrong. Star Wars Battlefront 2. Also one of the games, stories of the year for the wrong reasons. Just to backtrack, I was right. Insomniac Games made Sunset Overdrive.
Hey!
Oh, so
that's
I was right.
A game I'd like to see them
but,
bring
but,
back.
But in Insomniac, before Sunset Overdrive, they used to be with Sony,
3.
Right?
Yeah, they made Resistance for
PlayStation. Yeah, that's what you see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But.
Making, Sunset Overdrive is actually a really good game, by the way.
I'm waiting for them to do a sequel to that. But
that would be a good exclusive.
I mean, I know like State of Decay is coming out next year, but I don't care about that. I'm tired of that.
Sunset Overdrive was really
Sunset
fun.
Overdrive
was fantastic.
It was so cool.
That was a great game that came out at the time
launch.
The Xbox One came out to say,
yeah,
hey,
it was at launch.
Xbox One is out. This is an exclusive. This is what the system can do. Pair them up. Off
right?
you go.
It was like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, but you're shooting zombies.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
It was really fun.
With the slide.
Yeah,
that was cool. It's a cool game.
Bring it back,
Xbox.
Bring it back.
I'm fairly certain they are working on a sequel.
It's been years now.
Although, who knows if Insomniac is doing it because it's theirs and they're working on the Spider-Man game, so who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know what the deal is there.
In other words, Insomniac jumped ship to the right company.
What if Insomniac makes a sequel to Sunset Overdrive, but it's a PlayStation exclusive?
I'm laughing, but I'm crying inside.
What are you worried about? You'll have a PlayStation 4 by then.
That's true.
You can join us.
But which PlayStation 4 do I get?
You have a 4K television.
I don't have any.
Okay,
yet.
Well, then there it is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, exactly. What else in terms of games of the year or stories of the year do you guys sort of pick out as things that stand out?
Kind of an interesting niche for me, as you guys know, I love Japanese role playing games, mm-hmm. right? And this is an oddly super big year for them. Highlighted by obviously Persona 5,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and Persona 5, it was kind of cool because it got so much buzz, not just from niche RPG media, got so much buzz from like general gaming media, general gaming audiences, and it kind of helped bring the genre back into the spotlight for a little bit, because like there was a once upon a time the genre was like the biggest thing back in the Super Nintendo days, right? Mm-hmm. Or the PlayStation 1 days with Final Fantasy 7, and it kind of felt like P5 gave it a little bit of a renaissance, like P5 and Nier Automata. So those two games. So like that's a feel good gaming story of the year.
Interesting. What about you, Christine? Anything else that stands out for you,
or
stands down for you?
You know, it's always sad when companies shut down and close. And mm-hmm. I mean, there was a lot of layoffs in gaming this year, which you know you never want to see that. I mean, hopefully it all works out for the best. You know. Even Telltale's announcement that it was going to cut its staff and start working on fewer games. You know, I mean, that's a disappointment.
Games are expensive.
Which is interesting because they seem like a studio that was on a roll.
They were, and I think that they were steamrolling too much. And I've said this before, where that there were too many games, meaning other things were getting lost in the shuffle. And, you know, it's not that they weren't the caliber, because they were the same quality, the same caliber, but they just weren't as good. I found like when you're comparing some of the games that came out this year to previous years where
the highs were incredible this year.
Yeah, it was, and it was just one of those things where like I would love it if more of the games were like previous Telltale years. Like the Batman is okay. I liked the first one better. When I reviewed Guardians of the Galaxy, was it last month I reviewed that?
Batman.
It was, I said Batman already, pay attention. your phone buzzed, I understand. But yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy was nice, but it was okay. I mean, I'm looking forward to next year when we're having, hopefully next year when we're having Wolf Among Us 2. You know, I think ending the Walking Dead franchise is going to take a big hit for Telltale, and that's probably why this.
Yeah. I mean, like the Walking Dead is just really when people felt like they hit their stride.
Yeah,
right. Like with as a serious storytelling, kind of like gaming medium, because previous to the Walking Dead, they're just doing like kind of remakes of old adventure games like Sam and Max.
Yeah, they did that one that you like, the Back to the Future game.
Yeah, they were just doing like straight like humor. I'm pretty sure they did they? I think they did do Monkey Island.
I'm pretty sure they did.
Did they?
Yeah.
I think that I hope.
Yeah, Tales of Monkey Island. Telltale.
There we go. I'm sorry, I was wrong. You were right.
That's two for Moment this episode. Keeping score. Keep going.
So you know, I hope that what their next projects are and the way that their studio goes is for better quality, better, like, same standard, just not as many. Like I said when I was reviewing Guardians of the Galaxy, I just felt like it got lost in the wash of everything else that was there. And if you're going to pay that much to have the rights for a property, that's the last thing you want to have, is to just have it get pushed to the side. I would like to see them do something with that Game of Thrones franchise. The first game was not very good. But so many more things have come out
since
then.
Borderlands 2. Yeah,
Tales of the Borderlands 2 would be an amazing one to do.
So another game that had a kind of a comeback, a franchise that had a comeback, not that they really went anywhere, but they needed a refresh, was Call of Duty. You know, they kind of had gotten stale. It was still selling gangbusters. They were still making money hand over fist, as Call of Duties have for the last 10 years.
But they actually got positive press for the first time in a while.
Exactly, and response from the gamers. So when they... We know the story. When Battlefield 1 was announced, and they were going back to World War II, and then Call of Duty announced their game, and they weren't doing
that. Battlefield 1 was, like, technically World War I.
Right.
Yeah.
People were really upset that Call of Duty was kind of doing the same old, same old. So then when they announced that they were making Call of Duty World War II, people were like, yes, finally, let's go back to where it all began and do something that people were really excited about.
Just like for, there's an entire generation of COD fans who don't even know that, that the series roots
they just know the
started in World War II.
Exactly. They just know the Modern Warfare games and the Black Ops games. And it worked for them. It worked. People really liked this game. They enjoyed it a lot. They enjoyed the single-player campaign. They enjoyed the multiplayer. It kind of went back to its roots, but freshened up. And, you know, I don't think it's not in the game of the year discussion, but it was a good comeback for a franchise that really needed a refresh, really needed kind of to, like, recenter itself. And it won over not only the press, but also its fan base with a good kind of solid comeback to what it used to be.
Esports really, really took off this year.
Yeah,
like it was like from front to back, it was like presence of mind at all times. Like games are being specifically made with esports in mind, and all that kind of stuff.
League?
Yeah. Like if just the announcements, right? Like the NBA announced a 2K league.
Mm-hmm.
The Overwatch League was a massive story all year, with so many kind of like traditional sports owners just buying in left and right.
Yeah, and it was also I think you know, last year and the year before, it was esports kind of breaking into the mainstream. I think this year kind of the story is that it's just there now. You know, it's not as big of a story that people play video games for a living and make money, because it's like, oh no, this is just a part of life.
I think the story more so this year in esports was, well, yeah, traditional sports owners wanting to buy a piece of the pie, yeah. Right? Like, and that's pretty much all the Overwatch League is, right? Because you got Jeff Wilpon of the Mets, with the New York team. You got the Kroenke, you got Stan Kroenke. Well, that's way too many franchises, has a Los Angeles team, so many other like kind of like esports organizations partnered with like traditional big owners, like Misfits, GG is partnered with the Miami Heat, the Philadelphia 76ers, a lot of the NBA teams partnered with a bunch of like esports organizations in general.
And the NBA has, you know, shown a lot that they're the most progressive league when it comes to stuff like that. So you better believe, because Gary Bettman even commented earlier this year, he was on the Fan 960 in Calgary, our partner station, and he told them that it's not really an if, it's just more of a like, when are we going to do it? It's something they're very interested in, they want to do it, and I'm sure NFL, NBA, MLS.
Well,
they're all MLB. They're all watching to see how the 2K league goes.
So I'm not sure the listing will still be available when the show gets aired. But MLSE has, last time I checked, has a listing for a job called esports manager. Yes.
Wow.
And so part of the qualifications, you have to be involved in the scene. You have to know the players. But yada yada yada. But like, I originally thought this was just before like the Raptors 2K League team, because obviously the Raptors announced they're part of it. But it says also for FIFA and NHL franchises as well. Mm. So there you go.
Yeah, it's coming.
There you go.
It's coming. It's just a matter of time. Somebody just walked in the studio.
It's
Zach Cooper. No, it's not. It's not Zach Cooper.
Hello.
Hey!
Hi, buddy. Hi. Oh, I haven't seen you in so long.
I haven't seen you in so long.
I have to describe it because it's radio. People can't see.
No,
hi.
People cannot see.
We've been talking about highs and lows of the gaming gear. What's your highlight?
My highlight right now is actually the announcement of World of Warcraft Classic. Yeah.
Woo! Really?
Yeah.
That's
absolutely.
Out of the entire year.
Oh, the legacy,
year,
the legacy servers.
The legacy servers being announced is a huge move by Blizzard, and it's the right move. And yeah, the end.
What about you?
What about Destiny 2?
That is my low right now.
That's what I thought.
This expansion has been an absolute mess, to say the least. It has been very disappointing.
The laser pointer of doom, right?
Yeah. So the Prometheus lens is a completely broken gun, which is really funny, but then they kind of copped to it, and they sold it to everyone this weekend. And
did you buy it?
Yeah, I did. It is totally overpowered.
Dude, it feels good pub stomping though, right?
But everyone has it now. It's like a giant game of laser tag. That's all that's happening.
So then balance.
Yeah, it is balance. They balance themselves out by everyone having the most powerful gun ever made in the game. So,
what's your game of the year?
My game of the year is Persona 5.
Ooh!
Yeah, and it probably had the best music and art style I have seen in any video game. And it's Yep, and the story was great, and it's definitely my game of the year.
Oh, right on.
There we go.
Any game that let you down?
Any game that let
Destiny
me
down? Destiny 2.
Aside from
the expansion of Destiny 2?
Aside from the game of life.
Oh, yeah. That always lets me down. what let me down this year? That's a really good question. Not a lot. Everything has kind of...
This year has been really good.
Yeah, this year has been... I think this has been a surprisingly good year for games. I guess my only letdown is the fact that Red Dead Redemption got pushed back.
Yeah.
The Last of Us 2 didn't get released like I predicted it would.
Yeah.
Now that you're here, just as we do a year in review... Raise your hand if you played the game that the three of us promised. So I have not even thought about playing Red Dead Redemption.
Colin is the man. I didn't even touch Uncharted.
And what about you?
I played it.
You played Mass Effect.
I played Mass Effect.
Yay!
I played hours of Mass Effect.
I played it as well.
Wow.
Yes.
Christine, where's that such a letdown? Letdown of 2017. Moment in Christine for not holding up their resolution bargain.
That's right.
I did it. It's a good game, like everyone said it was. So yeah, it's in space. It's Dragon Age in space.
Ooh, right.
Yeah.
Maybe I should have played it.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
That's what you should have done.
You should have gone back and played some old stuff.
There you go.
Should have. Oh well.
Well, when I get my PS4,
By the way, I have to tell you, you missed one hell of an epic Christine rant when she talked about letdown of the year and railed against Xbox. It was amazing.
Really.
She's joining us with PlayStation.
I will say this. What actually surprised me the most this year was the Xbox One X. I think that it's probably their best chance to become relevant.
Their best chance.
There's nothing to play, though.
But the fact
I think it's the exact opposite.
I think it's a great system. It does exactly what you need it to. It's incredibly powerful.
So you're all about the teraflops.
I am. And it's quiet. I still can't believe how quiet
Brandon,
it is.
You are the only person who's played with it in
this
room.
A good point.
So.
It is the quietest thing I've ever dealt with in my life.
You know why it's quiet? Because it's always off because there's nothing to play
on.
Gears of War 4 looks so good on it. I love it.
Moment actually forgot Gears of War 4 existed.
That just goes to show. How's everything else?
Everything else is great. Everything else is really, really good.
Everything is awesome?
Everything is awesome.
Everything is cool when you're part of a team?
Especially when you're part of a team. This team, especially.
The Leafs?
Yeah, the Leafs team. They're pretty good.
Yeah,
they are. Yeah. Yeah, World of Warcraft Classic Legacy servers being announced, definitely my highlight.
Mm.
By far.
So I guess you're looking toward 2018 then.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's going to be another huge year. It's going to be back-to-back huge years.
And 2018 is going to kick off with a bang for me.
Why?
Monster Hunter.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm actually pretty excited for that. And I played Monster Hunter one other time, and I hated it. So
you just want to trash it, is what you're saying?
Well, maybe. We'll see how it goes.
Monhunt World!
Anybody else got anything highlighty wise?
I got your disappointment.
Oh, was that?
It was Andromeda.
Oh yeah,
Mass Effect Andromeda, and also Yooka-Laylee. So Mass Effect Andromeda. I mean, the core of a good game is there, but it's just not a good game.
Have we mentioned Battlefront yet?
Yes.
Okay, good. Battlefront 2 was poorly executed.
But man, does it look pretty.
It was the best looking game with the worst everything else.
That nobody wants to play.
Yeah.
Out of spite.
People are playing it.
Out of spite.
Yeah, I think it's more so mainly what you said is a spite non-play.
Yeah,
it's just
spite.
Yeah.
The year, the word of 2017, spite.
Yeah.
Spite. I mean, there's lots of other games we can talk about, but I think we kind of hit on the highs and lows of this year.
I was very disappointed with Assassins. I know that everybody else loved it.
Let me tell you why you're wrong. Assassin's Creed Origins was the best step and only step that Assassin's Creed could take right now. It is way deeper. There's so many more things to do. It is beautiful.
It is beautiful.
And
there's an educational mode in it. Or coming.
You learn a whole bunch of stuff about the pyramids.
They're literally implementing a mode where you don't kill anything. You just walk around Egypt and you learn historical facts.
How can you hate that, Christine?
That hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't happened yet.
All right. Do you want to know why I didn't like Assassin's Creed Origins?
Is it because they tore everything that it was the basis around?
No. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
They told the wrong story. The story of Assassin's Creed Origins is her story. Her story, not his story. When she put on that robe and she went to kill Caesar, I felt ripped off. Like, I spent all this time with Bayek, and it's Aya who gets to do that. It's Aya who brings the people together. It's Aya who initiates the symbol. It's Aya who heads to Italy. It is all Aya. It is not Bayek at all. And it should have been her story. It's bullshit that it was his story. He was a fine player to play, but he was a side character at best in the story that should have been her story, that should have been the Assassin's
Creed
Origins.
But how did it play?
It was fine. I didn't like that I commented.
But here's what I kind of like seeing about that. It's so rare that a major character that you're playing as is kind of the side story. You got to see the main thing, like, that she took control and she was like, I'm the leader. Because the whole thing was like, okay, Bayek's the leader of this. And it was a nice little, like, twist on it.
Nope.
That it was her the whole time that's been kind of pulling the strings.
Nope. It would be like telling the story of...
The Grinch?
No. It would be like telling the story of Jacqueline Kennedy without having any idea who JFK was. Like... You gotta tell JFK's story before you tell anybody else's story. You have to tell the main character story. Like, it's just...
But you gotta jump around on pyramids. Pyramids!
Yeah, I would have loved to do that as her. And it even goes so far to, right in the beginning of the game, just as you started, she has killed two people already!
It's true.
The story has begun, and it's not even his story. It's like, well, why didn't I get to kill those two people?
All I can say is, fight, 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 fight.
I think there will probably be some kind of downloadable content where you kill those two people as her. There has to be.
There better be.
There has to be.
There has to be, and it has to continue her story.
Yeah.
Like, when he walks into that room near the end of the game, and she has assembled what is the start of the group... I was like, why didn't I get to meet any of these people? Why didn't I get to start cherry picking people and be like, I like you.
Okay, so
you're on my side.
So,
let's start a combination where we can kill people.
So narratively, you did not like the game, but the game is still good. When you play the game, it's still
good.
When
I play Assassin's Creed Origins, when I play Assassin's Creed, I play for the narrative. That is what I want. I want a compelling story. I'm not even the biggest fan of the future or current whatever going on. But even that I felt a little ripped off about.
Whereas, I felt very ripped off for the current, like...
Like, there's a huge attack, her friend disappears, and then that's it?
Yeah.
We find, like, there's no closure to that except right near the end where it's like, what happened to everybody else?
Yeah, I know. That felt weird, too.
Like, there were so many things that were just like, damn.
There's a lot of, like, pieces that hopefully will be fleshed out at some time. I totally agree, because... I mean, as cool as the whole world is, there felt like there was a lot of holes.
Yeah.
So, like, I agree with that.
I would have liked it if you could have switched them back and forth at any time.
Just like Syndicate.
Just like Syndicate, yeah. Where you could have equally played. It could have started at her as her, then when she meets up with Bayek, then you play as him for a bit, and then she goes, and you go, and you go, because I thought from the perspective of seeing that final scene where her and Bayek are standing on the beach.
Well,
and,
spoilers.
Well, yeah, it's the whole thing is spoilers. They're standing on the beach.
On the beach?
And she tells him that she's going to wherever.
Yeah.
I thought it was powerful as his story, but then at the same time, I thought it would have been just as powerful if you had seen her making that evolution. Because you knew the way the story was going, no matter how passionate they were together, that she was leaving.
Like, I wonder if at first the plan was to make it like Syndicate, where you could bounce back and forth between the two in that style. And then it got cut out because there was so much that they wanted to do. They got like, it just feels, because like the game is, it's the biggest Assassin's Creed, and it's very ambitious for what everything that it does.
Absolutely.
And I feel like that's why it's still worth it, and it's still good because of it's my favorite
one since Black Flag.
Yeah, it's up. I find that it's up there with Black Flag for me.
I wanted there to be. See, that was the thing, too, with hers, is that I was super, super excited to do the go back on the ships and do the battles again, and to only be able to do that with the minute bit that you play with her. Yeah. I was like, I want more.
I want more of this.
I don't care about leaping and shooting arrows at things. I want more of
that. It's okay. Ubisoft is coming out with their actual pirate game.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yes.
Doesn't matter. It's not Assassins. I don't care.
It's not Sea of Thieves.
No. That's
the pirate game that you were talking about, remember?
Yeah.
Skull and Crossbones.
Skull and Crossbones, yeah. I can't wait for that.
All right, just before we wrap it up for the year, we have one more thing left to do, and that is our choices for Game of the Year. Steve, I'm going to go to you.
It was very difficult. I've gone back and forth on this constantly.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I'm going the one that gave me more joy, that just always put a smile on my
face.
Can
I guess?
Go ahead.
Super Mario Odyssey.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is not to belittle Breath of the Wild at all, but like when it came down to minute things. For example, like just atmosphere, right? Breath of the Wild's atmosphere is incredibly lonely, right? It feels isolated, which is what it's trying to do, right? Like it's trying to cast you as Link with basically like little direction, and you have to try to figure everything out. Odyssey just pops from the very get go. The game just straight up ignores its own story. They're just like, yeah, you're Mario. Here's the hat thing, Cappy. Let's go. You know, let's get this funky jazz ride off and running. And just like the amount of content that's just packed into Odyssey, it's just. It's mind blowing. There's so many moons, and it's just perfectly designed for the Switch, which is another thing I haven't went up against Breath of the Wild, because Breath of the Wild is originally a Wii U game, right? When they just kind of ported it over for the grand unveiling of the Switch, which, as we discussed earlier, was absolutely the right thing to do,
right?
But it wasn't designed for the Switch in the sense that the Switch is still, I still consider it more a handheld console than anything else, right? And as I say that, like, Breath of the Wild does not lend itself well to kind of bite-sized chunks of play when you're on the subway or on the bus or something, just kind of commuting to work or school. Odyssey is like completely designed with this in mind, because like you can, if your commute's like 40 minutes, you can probably get like, you probably get like 6-7 moons in that span, you know, save the game, put it away. On the way back home, it's another 40 minutes. Hey, bro, I'll pick up another 5 moons right here, you know? And so it's perfectly meant for that pick up and play kind of play style, right? Like you can drop it at any time and then pick it up at any time, and you don't feel like you've lost any progress. You don't feel lost, unlike with Zelda, where if you're like, it's an intense experience. You need to devote like a real play time, like a play session to it in order to feel like you're accomplishing anything.
Christine?
It's obviously Assassin's Creed Origins. So when it came down to Game of the Year, I thought about the game that I had fun playing, that I really liked playing, that I went back to playing, and that made me laugh, and that I liked the story of. And that game is Thimbleweed Park.
What?
Oh, yeah. From the Ron Gilbert game, right?
Yes.
Yes, yes, okay.
This game was, I think it came out in March. So it's from the people who did Maniac Mansion. It's like a point-and-click.
It's a straight throwback to Ron Gilbert's old point-and-click games.
It is funny, it is weird, it is kind of X-Files-y, it's got a nutcase, swearing, crazy clown, it's got ghosts, it's got sci-fi, it's kind of got a little bit of everything, and it was hard. Like, a lot of those puzzles were really, really hard.
I played it as well. It's a straight throwback to those old point-and-click games.
But it was so fun! Like, it was just one of those games where I laughed out loud at certain times when things happened, and of all of the games that I played this year, it was definitely one of the ones I had the most fun with and that I consistently enjoyed. And even I've actually even played it one and a half times. I went back to play it again just because I wanted to see what it was like on the different setting. There was literally easy setting, hard setting, but play it on hard. Don't kid yourself. Just play it on hard. In a million years, I wouldn't have guessed it would have been my game of the year. But in the end, compared to everything else I played, Thimbleweed Park came up on top. And so I'm going to have to give it my game of the year.
Before I get to mine, Patrick did send his in. He says his game of the year is Divinity Original Sin 2, which he called the best RPG he's ever played.
Yes, I remember him saying that.
It's a classic computer RPG.
Right.
There was another computer RPG I played this year that I actually liked more than Divinity. Well, Divinity is really, really, really good.
Yeah.
But it was Tides of Numera, Torment, Tides of Numera.
I think you reviewed that too, Patrick.
It's like the spiritual successor of Planescape Torment, which if anyone is an old school CRPG head, they know that game is awesome.
So I remember Patrick reviewing Divinity Original Sin 2 and just loving it. And if you look online, you can see it's getting like nines, nines and a half.
Yeah, it's a great game.
People really loved it.
It's an absolutely great game.
Yeah, for sure. And for me, it has to be Cuphead. I think it was like a game we were all kind of waiting for to see what would come of it. And it just completely blew me away. I talked about it early in the show. Just the storyline, the gameplay, how challenging it was, the juxtaposition of the animation versus how dark it was, how frustrating it was, how mad I got when I saw that speed run through it. And I was like, oh my God, you can't do that in this game. But all in all, great job by Studio MDHR from here in Southern Ontario. Congratulations to Mayan Moldehauer and the whole team. It was really, to me, a surprise of the year and also game of the year. Like, it was just really surprising how they really hit the mark and just had this great success. And I think we're all excited to see what that studio does and whether there'll be any DLC or whatever to come from it. And it was just really, really, really good.
Nice.
Yeah.
And we'll all know next week what we're looking forward to next year.
Yeah.
Well, people already know one of my most anticipated games of the
year. Yeah, me too. Yeah. They know a few things. Yeah.
All right, so that pretty much does it for the show. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of stuff we could have talked about as a whole year worth of highs and lows in gaming. We want to most importantly thank you for listening to our shows every week. It's been fun, as at least one of the five of us has been in studio every week this year. So it's been super fun. We had a great time doing some good stuff. There's definitely some highs and lows for us this year. So thank you so much for tuning in week to week. We'll be back in 2018. I hope you had a great Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever it is you celebrate. Enjoy the New Year's. We'll be back in 2018. So one more time for Patrick Luciani, who's not here, for Colin Robertson, who magically showed up unannounced. That's what I do. Steve Lung, Christine Chubb. My name is Momin Qureshi. You can follow us on Twitter at GotGame590. You will hear from us again in the new year.
Yay!
Goodbye.